So,
if you want to make money, don't go into Mormon studies.
Yeah, right?
In academia or anywhere else.
Yeah. So for those of us like Bill...
Even podcasting.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you might end up spending more than than you had planned.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In a previous conversation with Dr. Thomas Waymond, he mentioned that it seems like the Joseph Smith translation relied on Adam Clark's Bible commentary for many of the small changes. It turns out that Colby Townsend, a biblical scholar at Indiana University, believes that it wasn't just the New Testament that Joseph Smith relied on with Adam Clark's commentary. It turns out that some of these also impact the Old Testament and how Adam Clark viewed the documentary hypothesis. In our next conversation, we'll find out also how Adam Clark's commentary may have impacted the Book of Mormon translation. Check out our conversation. Hey, I just wanted to mention one more thing. The Mormon News Report podcast is an awesome podcast, and they cover the week in Mormon news with a healthy dose of snark and commentary. Join Brant and Jenny every Monday to get caught up on all those news stories that you can stay up to date on the latest Mormon news. So check out Mormon News Report. It's a great podcast. Brant and Jenny are great friends. Now back to our conversation.
Well, and I know you spent some time talking about Adam Clark's commentary, and I know Dr. Thomas Waymond has done that. Uh-huh. Which was just really fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it seems like Joseph used a lot of Adam Clark's commentary.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it was interesting to me as I read your paper to see how Adam Clark was reacting to this documentary hypothesis.
Yeah.
When he did that.
Right.
So that was interesting too.
Yeah, how he basically challenged all other biblical scholars, continental European biblical scholars, to actually prove the argument that Moses didn't write the Pentateuch.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah.
I mean, can you go into more detail on that?
Yeah, so Adam Clark was Scottish, Anglican, I don't know if he was Anglican earlier, he was Methodist, but he was a Scottish scholar, and he wrote really the first Methodist commentary, full commentary on the whole Bible. It was, 5 or 6 volumes altogether, and it was printed sort of serially from 1810 until about 1825. Started with Genesis, and before he was done with the Old Testament, he actually finished the New Testament, I think around 1816 or 18. Mm. But it was widely accessible, both in Britain and in the United States. Everyone had access to it, no matter what their standing was. You could buy it in each volume as it came out, or you could buy it in shorter quarters of volumes, or you could buy it in quarters of those. So it was really accessible.
Hmm.
We also know, Tom and Haley both sort of point to this in the forthcoming essay. It still hasn't been published yet. It should be any time. It's supposed to be this month.
Hmm. Who's publishing it?
University of Utah Press.
Oh, wow.
It's in a volume.
I'm going to have to get Tom back on. Tom's
right.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, Tom's awesome.
Yeah. So it's in a volume called Producing Ancient Scripture. It's a collection of different essays by different scholars.
Oh, that's that expensive book.
It's not too bad. It's 40.
Yeah.
Well, there are some others.
It's like 75 for the hardback.
Yeah, yes. I think you're right. Yeah, I think I got the paperback. Yeah.
I'll be getting the paperback, I'm sure. Unless,
right.
Unless, here, I'm just going to say that. Anybody at University of Utah Press, if you want to send me one, I'd be happy to do a review. and I'll interview Tom and Haley, too.
Yeah. Yep. I think that might have about a dozen scholars in
it. Yeah, and everybody keeps telling me it's a lot for the money, and I'm sure it is, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah, this is one that in a very real sense, this volume is a game changer.
Okay.
There are a handful of volumes that have come out this year that are like that, and within the last 6 months, there's really a big
push awesome
right now
books.
For really
and that
good.
One sounds fantastic. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited for it.
I know. I'm just going to make another plug. Matt Harris is finally coming out with his Gospel Topics book, and that should be out this fall too.
Okay.
So
nice.
That's going to be fun. I'm going to have Matt on.
Yeah, yeah, so. Good. Yeah, so in Tom and Haley's paper, they sort of discuss some of the possible ways that Joseph Smith could have gotten Adam Clark's commentary for the New Testament revision, because they show about 300 or so different revisions that Smith made to the New Testament that come directly from Clark. when you have that preponderance of evidence, it's really, there's no denying that. So what I'm doing in my chapter is essentially just showing that Adam Clark was really important and really significant, but showing also that the scholarship from Britain that was really directly affecting the Americas was shielding the Americas from some of the more specific points. So Adam Clark didn't name any of the scholars. He didn't engage directly with any of their theories. He didn't say who was arguing that Moses didn't write it. And it really wasn't until about 1805, 1810 that a lot of scholars started saying, yeah, Moses didn't write this. Deuteronomy had to be written far later. And some scholars have argued that this other German scholar in the late 18th and early 19th century shifted. His name was J.G. Eichhorn. Eichhorn, they claim, switched from thinking that Moses did write it in his, I think it was published about 1785, Introduction to the Old Testament, and then switched in later editions. But he never actually did. He kept believing and arguing that Moses had written the Torah. However it was that Moses wrote it, if he compiled it or whatever else, but he still was the one that did it. So it was really still, even when Adam Clark was writing, it was still a very new conversation in continental, you know, European scholarship. In my thesis, at least, that's the only time that I really touch on Clark's commentary, just to show that, Clark was really just not specifically saying why any of those scholars thought that way. He wasn't rebutting any of their specific arguments. He basically just used the obviously sort of by now time-worn argument that they don't really accept revelation, and so therefore forget them.
And so is that basically the argument that Joseph Smith adopted? Was Adam Clark's argument, forget them, Moses really did write these? Is that right?
Pretty much. I mean, we can't know because he never really specifically said, but right. If you look at Moses 1, which I have a paper coming out this this coming fall, in the that one will be in the Journal of Mormon History, on the composition of Moses 1 and 7, and the idea of translation as a modern expansion on ancient sources. I argue that Blake Osler's theory doesn't really work for the Book of Mormon. I don't really show why. I just say that it doesn't really work there necessarily, but it does work for the Bible revision. The text of the Bible is the ancient source, and then there are modern expansions. So Moses 1, for example. Moses 1 is fascinating because it's a totally new addition to the text of Genesis. And in a sense, it sort of reframes and recontextualizes the text of the Torah. It portrays the beginning of Genesis as if it's a revelation directly from God to Moses, and Moses is commanded to write it down. In my paper, I show that the first half of Moses 1 is dependent on the language and structure of Matthew 4 and a handful of other very specific arguments. I show that both Moses 1 and Moses 7 were composed in the 19th century. It's a fun, little tangent.
So that's
there,
something else we have to look forward to.
Yeah, in the fall.
But you're going to be in Indiana by then.
Right. Yeah. Luckily, we have the internet.
Yeah, we'll have to do a Skype something maybe. But,
yeah.
Well, interesting. So does this create any? Does the documentary hypothesis create any problems with the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith?
Well, there are a handful. I wouldn't say necessarily that the documentary hypothesis itself creates that.
Well, let me ask you this, because yeah. One of the big stories in the Book of Mormon, because what I'm hearing you say is the Torah as we know it didn't exist until long after Lehi, but there's the story in First Nephi where they go back and get the brass plates to get the Torah.
Yeah, and it says specifically the five books of Moses.
Right.
Yeah.
So isn't that a problem?
Yeah, that is for that. That's not the documentary hypothesis creating that problem.
Okay.
The documentary hypothesis itself is one theory of trying to understand how literarily the texts were composed. So that itself doesn't have any dates necessarily tied to it.
Okay.
The one date that scholars will use is for Deuteronomy, that's tied to Josiah's reform in some way.
So that he couldn't have gotten Deuteronomy.
Oh, yeah.
Laman and Lemuel couldn't have gotten Deuteronomy because it didn't exist.
Right. Well, and the Torah, whatever form it might have been in earlier, like pre-exilic time, so before Lehi leaves Jerusalem, it wouldn't have been a very public text, so that would make sense with the way that Lehi engages that. He's surprised by what he finds. But it wouldn't have been on brass plates. That is a very, very difficult thing to reconcile with history. Listeners could go and read a really important recent essay by Ryan Thomas in Dialogue on... he goes through and does an entire big look at all writing in the ancient Near East on metal plates, and shows very convincingly that the huge majority of ancient writing on metal plates was short, small, expensive, but never big, long, lengthy narratives.
What about, because I know there's a copper scroll that was found with the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah.
And it was curled up
in
a circle, basically.
Yeah. So he goes over that and everything else from a millennium before that and all the way down to that. So the copper scroll is really fascinating and really important, but even then that's not a large, long narrative. It has a little bit of information about some buried treasure and some other things. I haven't spent a ton of time with the copper scroll.
That sounds a lot Masonic.
Right? Yeah. Well, and it's funny because when it was the reason that that scroll got popular really fast when it was first announced is that buried treasure still there? you know? And so a handful of people went to look, but...
I haven't found it yet.
I don't think so. Yeah. So you do have some of that. The earliest attestation of any part of the Torah is from one of the parts of Numbers. It's a priestly blessing from the book of Numbers. And it was written on a little tiny amulet that, I don't know if he was a priest, I'm trying to remember, but it was buried as a necklace with this ancient Israelite individual. And so you actually have a tiny little part of this priestly blessing, but it wouldn't have been a part of the full text of the book of Numbers. It was just a little blessing on an amulet that he wore around his neck. So you do have some metal writing. You have writing on stone. You have different kinds of writing, but you don't have at that point the kind of lengthy record keeping on metal plates at any point in Israelite history. The Copper Scroll, maybe that's the closest that you get, but even then, that's really its own. That's sort of the exception that proves the rule kind of a thing. You don't get on brass plates.
And it should be noted that it's a rolled-up scroll, not a flat plate, I guess.
Yeah, right. Well, and especially, I assume that the brass plates would have been similar, and I think that most readers have assumed that they would have been similar to the golden plates. Right. Some rings and some other things. So, the study of the composition of the Pentateuch, which includes the documentary hypothesis, even without the documentary hypothesis, even if you only went with German scholarship or most other approaches, even the most conservative within critical scholarship, the most conservative attempts to understand when the five books came together as five books, it would have been really the early return from the Babylonian exile, and probably a little bit after that.
So 500 BC. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So that is a complication, definitely, for the text of the Book of Mormon, and for the narrative that you have in First Nephi. Huh.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with biblical scholar Colby Townsend. In our next conversation, we'll talk about whether Joseph Smith was really illiterate. It turns out in the 19th century, the definition of illiterate had a different meaning than it does today.
When someone would say that, that person's illiterate, that didn't mean they couldn't read or write. It didn't mean anything like that. It meant they weren't cultured. It meant that they didn't understand history. It meant that they didn't understand literature.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruption. If you'd like a paperback version of our transcripts, go to amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview. Also, if you'd like to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website, and I'll be able to send you a transcript as soon as they are completed, and click the subscribe button. You can also find our latest information on facebook.com/gospeltangents, as well as we're on Twitter @gospeltangents. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. The link is at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents, and you can subscribe there. Also, please give us a 5-star review. If you want to support all of the podcasts as part of the Dialogue Podcast Network, go to lyceum.fm, that's lyceum.fm, and do a search for Dialogue Podcast Network or Gospel Tangents, because, you know, that's a pretty cool one too. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.